Dr. Lesley McDowell studied English literature at university. She did a PhD on James Joyce and taught English at St. Andrews. My name is Heather Sutty and you're listening to The Book Alchemist. Shall I call you Doctor?
No.
No, we need to put that in.
No.
Dr. Lesley McDowell, welcome to The Book Alchemist.
Thanks very much.
What is your doctorate in?
I've got a PhD on the work of James Joyce. And the reason I use it, the only social media I use it now on is Twitter. And I hadn't when I first joined Twitter. The reason I did it was I think the year that Joe Biden won the election, and Jill Biden, who is a doctor, or has a doctorate, they just kind of ignored it. And so there was this kind of little move amongst women to suddenly go, wait a minute, you know, I've got one too. And they started putting it in their bios. And I thought, yeah, I'm going to do that too. So I just left it there.
I love that. That's so cool. Now, you did a PhD on James Joyce.
Yeah.
I've never read James Joyce. He is in my to-be-read Burj Al Khalif, because that is the height of my to-be-read pile. What made you choose to do a PhD in James Joyce?
It's when I was a student and I got the flu one year. I think it was about 19. So it'd be about second year at uni maybe. And I got the flu, so I was at home. I was stuck in bed for about 10 days. And as I started to get better, a book arrived because I was in a book club. And it just happened to be Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man. And so that particular day, I was looking for something new. It arrived and I started reading it. And I couldn't, straight away, I couldn't quite understand it because he starts off in sort of baby speak, baby language. I thought, what on earth is going on? And then I twigged as to what was happening. I thought, oh my God, this is amazing. And I've always liked, you know, fiction or literature that kind of, I've always been quite interested in experimental stuff and modernism and stuff, although I didn't know much about modernism then. And I just loved it. I just absolutely loved it. There was lots of it I didn't understand, but I just loved how he phrased things. And that got me really into it. I read Dubliners. And then the following year, I had some time. I thought, I'm going to try Ulysses. I'd heard about Ulysses and that it's impossible. And that's always, when someone tells me something's impossible to read or impossible to understand, I'm always like, nope, bloody isn't. Oh, sorry.
No, that's great.
You have to edit out a swear word.
Oh, you can swear all
you like. I do swear. I'm quite bad for that.
Amazing. I'm already feeling intellectually inferior because I've not read any of this. So you then went on to teach English at St. Andrews. Mm-hmm. Has reading always been a huge part of your life? Like even before you did your PhD, was it something you were encouraged to do?
Yeah, I've always read, even as a little kid, and we didn't have books at home. I read an article recently. There was this thing about working class people don't have bookshelves. It's if you're middle class, you've got all your bookshelves. Well, my parents were both working class. We didn't have money for books. A book was a treat that I got for a birthday or Christmas when I got a book voucher. Mm-hmm. That was a big, big thing. For some reason, and I don't know where I got this from, I liked to keep my books. So I would buy books. I think my first sort of proper paperback was a Famous Five book, which I got. And I know it's 1974 because I wrote the date in the inside. Oh. So I would have been seven when I got that. And I started a little collection because I wanted all the others. I wanted to get all the other Famous Five books. And my dad used to take me and my brother up to the library, the local library, about every sort of second week. And I still remember when I got my adult library card, I think I was 12, because then you could borrow as many books as you liked. When you were a kid, you could only get three, and I'd be through them in about the first 3 days. So I liked having books I could reread. And my dad built me some little shelves in my bedroom to put my books on, because at this point I had quite a lot. I think in those days, I'm sure it was before B&Q even existed. I think it was MFI you went to when you wanted DIY
that's,
stuff.
That's in the Glens, Hutchinson, the Robertson, Steffek.
Yeah. It really is. It really is. But no, I just always love reading. I think I get it from my mum. My mum was really, and still is, very, very bookish. And she also tried to write as well. She used to go to creative writing classes, evening classes that they were run by a man called Hugh C. Ray. Who wrote historical romances as Jessica Sterling, I think.
Oh, that name rings a bell.
Yeah. So she was always writing, and I thought that was just kind of normal. You know, she was always bashing away in a typewriter, doing stuff. And I've told this story on Twitter before. When I was in primary four, the teacher was giving out prizes for, like, you know, best at maths or best at English. And she told me I was getting best at creative writing. And I promptly informed the class, age eight, that I was in the middle of writing a novel. And she said, she started to laugh and she said, I'm going to give you a prize for modesty as well, Leslie. And everybody laughed and so did I. But at the same time, I was like, but I actually am. Because I was, but I was really just copying my mum, because my mum was in the middle of writing a novel. So, you know, I was doing the same sort of thing.
So your parents must be super proud of you.
Yeah, I mean, my dad's sadly passed away now. He died in 2007. But my mum's kind of, he died actually. He did know I'd gotten a deal because I'd signed, I think, for my first novel, The Picnic, in 2006. So he kind of, and I'd gotten an agent as well. So he knew things were happening. But I think my mum and dad have always been very much about do what makes you happy. And there were a couple of times I've gone into jobs and I'm not really a job person in the sense of like 9-to-5 stuff. I'm not very good at times and things. And my dad was always just like, no, that's okay. You don't have to climb some career ladder. Mm-hmm. You do what's fulfilling. And that was what they always wanted for me and for my brother as well.
And you're smashing it.
Well, I'm what, 56 now. It's taken quite a long time. It feels like it's been, I look at people now who are, you know, trying to write their first book and they get very concerned that it's not happening fast enough. And I just think sometimes these things take time. The sort of publishing industry is very much about youth and doing things fast, but you need to learn what you're doing. You kind of need to, it sounds so, I don't know, to sort of say, oh, learn your craft, but it is about that really.
No, absolutely. And I also think as well, you need to have a certain length of life experience to be able to create characters and a storyline that has depth.
Well, some people get a lot of experience, too much life experience by the time they're, you know, 14. And some people might not have any life experience really till they're 34. Who knows? It all changes. But yeah, I think how you respond to certain experience changes, obviously, as you get older. You have different attitudes to things and different feelings about things. So yeah, I think one of the things about when you're younger, because I remember, you know, wanting to write when I was a student, wanting to write, you know, my own fiction, and I didn't know what to write about because I didn't have anything to, nothing was sparking. Because like you say, I didn't have that much experience by that at that point.
So tell me about the books that you've written so far.
Well, the first one I did was The Picnic, which was kind of, actually the first book I tried to write is the one that's out now.
It's Claremont.
And that's the one I tried to write straight off and I couldn't do it because I didn't know how to do it really. Mm-hmm. So I kind of put that to one side and I started, I had another idea for a novel which was based on, it's really sort of memories of being in Canada. My dad's parents emigrated to Canada sort of early 1950s when there was a big wave of Scots going over. But my dad never really kind of adapted to it. And he came back himself when he was about 21. He came back to Glasgow. And so we went over on a holiday in 1973. So I'd have been about six. I've got vague memories of it. And I had vague memories of this picnic, this sort of family picnic that we're all at. And I just kind of thought from there, oh, you know, it was a little bit about Glasgow and Canada and that sort of old world and new world type thing. But I like the idea of someone going missing. And I realized, I'm not really sure where I got that idea from, but I was a big fan of Joyce Carol Oates. And I wonder if it was maybe a sort of subconscious thing because she's always got characters doing stuff like that.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, I can see the connection. Okay, so Claremont was published.
It came out at the end of February this year. It is something I'd started, like I said, I first started this, 20 odd years ago. That's when I first tried to write it and I couldn't because I just didn't know how to handle all the material. I had Mary, Shelley and Claire in a room and I couldn't get them out, which sounds silly because obviously you just say, ah, they got up and left the room. But I didn't know how to make them walk and talk at the same time and all of that kind of stuff. So I didn't really have the technical know-how. And it's not until you start to, I think, try and write a novel, you realise quite how technical they are and about pacing and narrative voice and all that kind of stuff. So, it took me a while to kind of learn how to do all that, I think.
And what's the reception been like?
It's been amazing. I've been really surprised because I was a little bit anxious about how it would go. You always are, I think, but especially because I'm not being nice about Byron, and Byron has a lot of fans. Not being very nice about Shelley, and Shelley has a lot of fans. Not being nice about Mary Shelley, and she's got a lot of fans. And I just thought, oh, people are just going to hate this. But actually, I'm surprised. People have been really, really nice about it. So that's been lovely.
Have you enjoyed the promotional element of it? Because I know some authors love the creative writing part, but then when it comes to promotion, they just kind of, it's just not their thing. Have you embraced that?
Well, that's interesting because it's 10 years between books for me. My last book came out 10 years ago. It's Unfashioned Creatures. So that's 2013. In fact, it was 11 years. Shit. 11 years ago. And then, I mean, social media was a much smaller beast then than it is now. So I thought I kind of understood what it would be like now, I think, with... Yeah, I've got a Twitter account, Facebook. I started doing little TikToks in the run-up to it, which I really enjoyed because I would do some with music and chat about, a little bit about Claire. So that was all really nice. And then it kind of hits, and it was, I think the world of the bookstagrammers and book bloggers has just, it's just exploded in the last 10 years. It's huge. Mm-hmm. And I would say this time, I actually found it quite overwhelming. Mm. It was interesting because it was the print reviews I was anxious about, and the print reviews were all great. When it came to the book bloggers, there were some who really had a problem with the structure of Claremont because it's sort of a triple timeline. Mm-hmm. And also they didn't know enough about the characters, the real life characters, and they wanted a bit more of that. I was kind of thinking, God, it never even occurred to me to explain who they were and do that kind of backstory. So I was starting to think, because I've got a second book coming out, I'm just finishing now, which is also about a real person. And I thought, oh no, am I not explaining enough about this? And I started to panic. And as soon as that doubt comes in, as soon as you start to think, oh no, am I doing the right thing? It can be a little bit anxiety inducing. So it was interesting because I'd put up a post, I'm a member of an authors group called the Savvy Authors Snug on Facebook. And I put up a post just saying, how are other writers finding the whole kind of author, mental health, self-promotion, promotional marketing stuff? How are they finding that? And someone suggested to me Sophie Hannah's course, Dream Author, which it's run by Sophie Hannah, obviously. And it's a sort of 14-month course that you go on where she's really tackling questions about how you think of yourself as a writer. And how, you know, what goals you have as a writer, what do you want, how do you see things long-term, and how to cope with a sort of wider reception, because it is a bigger world now than it was then, that whole kind of reception thing. And so I've only just started it, but I'm really enjoying it. It's really kind of, I think I kind of lost the joy a little bit, even though the print reviews were lovely. I think I was just starting to panic too much about the next book and not just enjoying the writing of it.
Yeah, yeah. So just to rewind then, so book talk, bookstagramming, blah, blah, blah. I have quite an addictive personality, so I don't go on TikTok because I just think, well, I could spend all day on that.
Yeah.
But I think you've made a really interesting point about the context of how you review and how you read a book. So for any of our listeners who've not yet read Claremont, how would you position it?
Oh, gosh. To me, I would describe it as a feminist retelling of a woman who has been kind of sidelined in terms of that big dramatic story of Mary Shelley inventing Frankenstein, the group of them, the group of romantics who are in this villa in Lake Geneva. There's been films made about it. There's books written about it. Lots of stories. And Claire is always kind of just you know, in the margins. She's not the centre of it. And she's the one there who's pregnant with Byron's child. She's the one who introduces Shelley and Byron to each other. And I just thought, yeah, there's nothing. There's no fiction really that or film or anything that tells these stories from her point of view. Mm-hmm. And she's quite a remarkable woman as well. She did a lot after that.
I love the cover. Who designed the cover, and did you have a big say in what you thought it should be visually?
No, I didn't. I didn't have any say in it. They asked me what I thought of it when they sent it through, and they did say, you know, if you've got any tweaks or any suggestions, you know, that's, you'll let us know. But no, I just thought it was amazing. It wasn't what I'd pictured at all.
Yeah,
I hadn't imagined that it would be a sort of dark blue background, and it's an artist who, she also has done some work for, I think, Stacey Hall's books as well. So I thought it was stunning. I really loved it.
I very often choose a book based on the cover.
Really?
And I'm wondering, have you ever done that?
Oh, I'm trying to think.
I recently picked up a book called Listen for the Lie. I think it was called Listen for the Lie or Listen. Yeah, Listen for the Lie.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the author, but the reason I picked it up was I just loved the colours.
Yeah.
It was like yellow, pink, and it was about basically it was about a podcast story about a murder, and I just loved it. It was like, yeah, nothing I'd ever seen before in terms of, you know, being visually striking.
Yeah, I think there's kind of a, I think I really like stylized covers. Mm-hmm. I like something, yeah, that really kind of stands out. I know that could sometimes put some people off, but yeah, I like it when it's like that. And at least the thing they'll do is, of course, they'll just attract you to them. You might not buy the book. You might read it and go, oh, well, this isn't my sort of thing at all. But yeah, I think the covers are huge.
And I also think, you know, books are beautiful. I don't have beautiful bookshelves. I know you mentioned your dad made your bookshelves, yeah, when you were a wee. How do you organise your books at home?
Well, we had, my husband's a writer as well, so we had tons and tons of books. We were renting a big flat, big old space, so we had tons and tons of old, you know, IKEA bookshelves. And then we moved in together, we bought our flat, which is much, much smaller than what we were renting, so we had to get rid of lots of books, which was really painful. And then we got a joiner in to build built-in bookshelves. It's just your basic wood, which I then painted.
Oh, wow.
Did them in the sort of, we've got a narrow hallway and a living room. So we had them, we've got them in there. And it's funny because our flat is a north-facing garden flat, so it doesn't get a lot of light at all. And I found that with the bookshelves in the front room, if they all had light spines, it made the room lighter.
Oh, wow.
So I've ended up kind of color-coding things without meaning to. Oh. It's really just for like a bit of light. And then when I went into the hall, I thought, oh, well, I put, like, I think red books grouped together look amazing.
You know, I just had a sense that that's what you had done.
I just did once I got started. Well, I suppose if you've got like a series of, you like old Penguin classics or something, yeah, or whatever, I mean, they all look the same anyway. So you've, yeah, got those in a block and you've got that kind of colour block anyway. But
yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
it gets messed up, obviously, because you just shove books back in here and there, place,
yeah,
but
I'm so, yeah, glad I asked you that. I kind of had a sixth sense that that might be the case. So tell me about your favourite non-fiction book that you've ever read. I know that's probably a really difficult question, but if you've got lots of books, is there one that's a sort of standout for you?
Oh gosh, favourite non-fiction. I mean, I suppose probably would be a biography by someone. And I like big biographies because I always find the deaths of writers or artists or whatever upsetting. I kind, mm-hmm, of, I want them to delay it for as long as possible. So it would probably be a biography of someone. And I do like biographies of writers and artists. And I like hearing about their lives. So I'm not sure I could pick a specific one, but yeah, it probably would be, particularly of women. I like reading about women's lives, yeah.
You're very, very into women's work, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. I think it just, obviously there's something relatable about it that I find I can kind of connect with it. But I'm just interested in women's lives, especially that sort of 19th early 20th century stuff, just how they got stuff done, just how they managed it.
Have you read any of Sarah Sheridan's work?
Yes. Yeah, in fact, I'd read the recent one, the most recent one.
The Secrets of Limestone Square.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's excellent. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I was saying that to her actually. What I really admire about what she does is how she uses detail, because it's really hard to put in a lot of historical detail and it not feel like it just is smothering the story or the characters. And she's really, really clever about packing in loads of detail, but it never feels that sort of heavy, smothering way. Mm-hmm. So there's a real skill in being able to do that.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, that's why one of the reasons that I love doing this podcast and I love the book group and the community that I've set up, because we're all about positivity and about celebrating the great work, because there's nothing more soul-destroying than someone slating something that you've created, whether it's a, you know, cake you've baked or, you know, a project or a book. So I think it's really important for people to really think carefully about being critical of another person's work on a public platform.
Yeah, I mean, again, I suppose I didn't have this experience in the past before, because I think social media was much smaller then, but this is my first experience this time of being tagged in a negative review by someone. And she did it on Instagram She tagged me in, she'd made a little video of Muppets and there was a sort of, the music went wah, 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 and across it was written, "Sorry, I didn't like your book." And I just thought, why would you do that?
I know, but see, I just think that's cruel.
It's definitely odd.
It's not funny.
Yeah, and
it's not clever.
It's definitely an odd thing to do.
Weird way to spend your time.
Yeah.
You're a fan of Hilary Mantel.
Yeah.
An author that I have never, ever read, because again, I have this intellectual inferiority complex. So tell me about some of the Hilary Mantel books that you've enjoyed.
Well, I've only read the Wolf Hall trilogy. I haven't read her earlier stuff and I really need to, because people rave about it. And I hadn't read her at all until Wolf Hall. And again, that just kind of blew me away, how someone can use all that sort of historical information, and there's so much of it, and just create something completely different. And also turn around your expectations of, you know, everybody thinks of Thomas Cromwell as like a butcher, son of a blacksmith, and he was a serious psychopath. And she turns him into this completely different, believable person. And I can see what you mean about sometimes I think with some historical work especially, you look at it and you think, oh God, that's just going to be like homework. It's just going to be
like
really,
a history
really hard
lesson at school. Yeah.
And certainly there's, the thing I've always had with difficult books is there are huge chunks that you're not going to get. You're not going to understand. It doesn't matter. What you get from it is the psychology of it. And that's what I really like. What she does really well is the psychology of that person. And she manages to do it in, like, even when he's eating something trivial, there's still a sort of psychological aspect to the way he's doing it. Mm-hmm. And I love all of that stuff. I really like psychological writers. Mm-hmm. It's probably why I like Joyce Carol Oates as well, because she's really, you know, heavily on the sort of psychology stuff. So I wouldn't be nervous of her. Give it a go. You might not like it. I have got some friends who love historical fiction and don't like the Wolf Hall trilogy at all, just find it goes on and on and on. But that's another thing. So I always really liked big books. Even as a kid, I remember reading, there was a TV series. It was R.F. Delderfield. I can't remember what it was, a program about an English teacher in a school. It was historical. He did a series called, it was God is an Englishman, God is an Englishman series. And it was, that was separate though. But anyway, R.F. Delderfield always did big novels and I loved that. And I get that from my mum, I think. She always liked big novels that just go on and on and on. I could just read forever.
Have you read any Claire Keegan?
Yes. Not for a while though. It's quite a long time ago.
I just read my first of hers recently because I find myself being drawn to novellas just because, I don't know, maybe just because I'm a wee bit time strapped at the minute.
Yeah.
I feel like if I can read a novella of a night or short stories, I've had my bookish hit.
Yeah.
So I can go to sleep. So are you just completely drawn to the big chunky ones?
No, not always. And if you are looking for short novels, Emma Tennant is amazing. And she always did like short novels. And they're always slightly, it's a wee bit of a sort of postmodern thing that she's got going on. But again, real sort of psychological stuff. But her stuff's amazing. So yeah, I like it when it's, just because it's short doesn't mean it's gone in a flash. Mm-hmm. You know, there's such a talent goes into being able to say a lot in a short space.
I completely agree. And that's the thing, these books do have a tendency to stay with you because it's just so powerful. Do you remember when you were growing up, was there one book that just really moved you and to this day you think, well, if I picked that up again, I would absolutely love it?
Oh gosh, probably Rebecca. I loved that.
By Daphne du Maurier?
Yes.
Wow, so did you read that as a child?
No, I was probably about 11 or 12.
Right. Well, that's still very... I mean, I didn't discover it until I was in my 30s because my gran loved Daphne du Maurier. And for some reason, I mean, she also loved lots of Mills and Boone books and she got me into ABBA. but I never, ever got round to it because I just thought I was just put off by the size of it and the print. And then I read it and I'm like, oh my gosh, I love this.
It's amazing. I think for me, a lot of those books came from like films or TV. Like I read Pride and Prejudice when I was about 13, but not because I was, you know, desperate to read Jane Austen. It's because I watched the TV series and Rebecca, I remember seeing the film it was the Laurence Olivier one, the black and white one. Oh, it's such an amazing film. Just absolutely loved that. And so immediately I was just like, oh, I have to read that book. And I thought it was amazing. And I do remember being, there's a girl in my class. I can't remember, I think it was in an English class or something. And we were asked about our favourite books. And she said, Rebecca. And I was really pissed off. Because I was like, that's not your favourite. It's my favourite book. It's my book. And I really felt it meant something to me. Because that whole bit at the beginning where she's so nervous and she's just so kind of like, you know, kind of submissive, but also just kind of like wondering what's going on. And I was at that age, I was what, 12, 13. That's exactly how I felt.
Yeah, it's so good. I have to say I was so disappointed in the Netflix adaptation of it.
I just
wanted it to be of the same era rather than set in like the 1920s and 30s in the south of France.
Yeah.
On that note, on Daphne du Maurier, have you read My Cousin Rachel?
Oh, yes. But that was, again, that was about a million years ago. I think I was about 13 then when I read that.
Film with Rachel Weisz.
Now, I mean to see that. Is that good?
Very good.
Oh, all right.
Yes, okay. It's excellent. Yeah. I mean, I love her. I think she's brilliant. It's very good.
To Make It In as well is another really good one. Yeah.
Noted. That. Tell me about the book that you're currently writing and how's it all going?
It's going fine. I can't say much yet, I don't think, about who it's actually about. Mm-hmm. But it is about somebody who certainly local audiences will know about her or have heard about her. I wonder if I can say it is a little bit about a crime and it's historical. And I think I have solved it. I have a solution. That's all I'm saying.
Wow. Okay. I'm intrigued. And tell me this. Do you ever have any ambitions for your work to be televised?
Oh, that'd be lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah, please. Yeah, I think that'd be amazing to see it. Either on TV or in films or anything. I mean, it's not, you say ambition, it's not something, I don't write thinking that way. And I know that there are some writers who are also script writers as well. I mean, my husband does that. He writes novels, but he also does screenplays. And I've never really tried to write a screenplay, so I don't have that kind of, it's not like a realistic ambition. It's a fantasy one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what about when you're reading yourself? Like, what are you currently reading to just switch off? Like, do you read stuff that's the polar opposite of what you write about?
Not really. I'm trying to think, because usually when I'm writing my own stuff, I'm still reading some of the research background just to kind of keep it in my head, in the same sort of like headspace. Once that's finished, I'm probably thinking about the next project and the next person I want to write about. So probably by the summer, I'll be researching her because I know who it is I want to write about next once I finish this one. And she's also a real person. But I think for me, yeah, Hilary Mantel is somebody. And Joyce Carol Oates, usually still, if she has a new one out, I will grab that just to see what that's like, because I love her stuff. She could pretty much write anything and I would love it. But I will check out like new stuff. I've started Flora Carr's The Tower, which I'm enjoying, and also Nuala O'Connor's Seaborn, I think it's called, which is lovely. It's got a lovely sort of, she's a pirate, female, Irish female pirate. She's got an amazing voice. It's lovely as well. So yeah, I definitely will probably veer towards historical stuff or that kind of like psychological type. Usually something like that has a bit of a mystery to it. I do mm-hmm. quite like something with a bit of a mystery to it.
And my final question, where do you enjoy buying books the most? Do you have a favourite bookshop? You know, are you the type of person like whatever city you go to, you make a beeline for the local bookshop?
Do you like to go to local bookshops when we go on holiday? Lisbon is my favourite place for going on holiday and they've got amazing bookshops.
Have they? I've never been to Lisbon.
Oh, you have to go. It's great. It's really lovely. And it's got a feel like Glasgow and a little bit in that sense of it, you know, it's up and coming. It's got a big industrial past. So it's doing lots of different things, but it's a young city and it's really progressive and it's just got a lovely energy to it. And it's got lovely big old bookshops. So yeah, I know people go on about what they really love is like little bookshops, little old bookshops with, you know, little windy passageways. No. I like big, grand bookshops. I like bookshops in big old palazzos, that kind of thing. That I love that because I just think books are, they deserve that kind of space and grandeur and they should be able to kind of flex their muscles a bit and not be in this little, you know, underground spot. So yeah, that's what I like.
Totally agree. Now, I would love to ask you to do one final thing for me. Will you please tweet a picture of your bookshelves and tag me because I really want to see them. And I think Anna Campbell-Jones from Scotland's Home of the Year will be very interested because she loves interior design and particularly looking at bookshelves.
Oh, no way. She's not going to look at our wonky shelves. There's no way.
Dr. Lisa McDowell, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for having me.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please take 30 seconds to rate, review, and subscribe. It really helps. New episodes drop every Thursday. Thanks so much for listening.